think those lessons today are pretty straightforward. I don't know if they need any comment whatsoever.
Just we've got rather more than we can deal with today. Three lessons from Jeremiah and from Romans and from Matthew, and all of them are dense and complex and start throwing at us things which at first hearing sound pretty startling. I want to begin with what I hope to use throughout this sermon as a kind of interpretive key. And it comes not from the ancient texts. Some of these are, Jeremiah was writing around 600 B.C., B.C.E., and it's an ancient text. It will take us into some things that feel ancient. But I want to start with contemporary psychology. Not even so contemporary anymore. It's now 100 years old. Sigmund Freud. Sigmund Freud said something that I've always found both very poignant and very true and very provocative. He said, people come to me and they want me to make them happy. I said, I can't do that. What I can do is help people replace neurotic suffering with real suffering. So you laugh. Of course you laugh. Like, what a bargain. Sign me up. I'll go five times a week and pay my $150 an hour and bankrupt myself so I can engage real suffering. And yet, there is in this something that I hope we recognize as deeply true and deeply congruent with our gospel teaching. It may even have, it may be a distant relative of the beatitude we hear of Jesus, who says, blessed are you who mourn. Blessed are you who are really engaged with the suffering of the world. What Freud was going for, I think, is really, really trying to help people understand that there is a way of being alive in the world where you are divided against yourself. Neurotic suffering, and neurotic, and we don't use that word very much, that's kind of in the psychoanalytic vocabulary of the early part of the 20th century, mid part. It's kind of faded away, I think. But neurotic suffering would be where you're really fighting against yourself. There are things within yourself that you don't want to acknowledge. There are things that you see that you don't want to acknowledge, that you don't want to give voice to. And so the suffering that entails is being at war with yourself or being afraid of yourself, having things within you that you might be afraid would be revealed somehow. And then what would people think of you? And of course, the cultural mechanisms for determining what's acceptable and not acceptable, widely known to be profoundly flawed. We get a lot of stuff buried in us that is really profoundly valuable. It's not just we're hiding our inner serial killer, but we are often hiding our tender side. We are hiding our compassionate side, as I've said so many times. Historically, women, I think, have hidden or had judged by the culture their strong, direct, clear, assertive voice. Pushy. Isn't she kind of pushy? Gets judged, And then many people say, what's really most deeply buried in us, what is most profoundly suppressed by our culture, is the love of God. Genuine love is the last thing that culture wants to enter into the public conversation. So there's neurotic suffering, at war with yourself, unable to talk honestly about yourself, unable to feel what you really feel, unable to see what you really feel, because there's a cost associated with it. We're going to get into that cost a little bit, but anybody ever been in a family situation where the family, sort of the pressure of the family is not to talk about something? There's an elephant in the room, or a dead horse in the room, or whatever you want. It's in the room, but we're going to agree that our family stability and our tranquility is based on not talking about it. And if we talk about it, it's going to blow up. Well, that's a very fragile situation. That is the neurotic suffering that Freud was talking about. And the real suffering When you say, I'm not going to be at war with myself. I'm going to try to be as honest as I can about really the depth of my feeling and my peculiarities and my quirks of personality. I'm going to try to be as honest as I can with that. But do we think then that that really delivers us to a world in which everything is happy? Rather not. Now, what Freud says, you get to engage real life now. It's not going to be this kind of frightened, divided, internal war against yourself. Now you're going to suffer from the real things of human beings. You're going to suffer with the uncertainty. You know, how do you figure out how to live a life? You know, you sort of, how do you figure out how to make decisions? What do you do with loss? What do you do when somebody you deeply love is taken away from you? What are you going to do with that? That's real suffering. It's real loss. There's real confusion and real... And it doesn't all come from this inner division. Once your eyes are open and your heart is clear, there's still a pretty hard world to deal with. And so I want to just put that before us because I think that's really so much of what is being talked about, at least in Paul and in the gospel. I mean, when Jesus talks about, I've not come to bring peace but a sword, I have come to set mother against mother against daughter, father against son. And of course, I've always said, why do we need Jesus for that? He seemed to do perfectly fine, you know. And the level at which we do perfectly fine is it's the confused, it's the turmoil, it's just the ordinary garden variety fighting that in the end turns out to be not very productive. What Jesus wants, I think, what Jesus is pointing toward in that gospel is once people start to wake up, and this is kind of straight out of family systems kind of thinking, but families, for instance, are held together by a kind of tacit agreement. We're going to talk about these things. We're not going to talk about these. This is what we accept as normal. This is outside. And all these kind of unwritten rules. The price of belonging to the family is often obeying and listening and living by those rules. And those rules, in the eyes of Jesus was not naive or sentimental about families at all, you know, in Christian family values, today in the gospel. You know, not sentimental. You know, Jesus understood how profound the pressure can be from within a family to conform, to sacrifice who you actually are in order to continue your belonging with the family. And if you decide that who you actually are is a greater imperative than the belonging, well, that's when the fireworks start. I can't belong to this family I can't belong in the same way because it costs too much. I have to tell too many lies about myself. And so Jesus said, you know, there, when you stop telling lies, conflict will ensue. And yet it's not meaningless conflict. It's the conflict of what happens when the truth destabilizes things. Now, I'm not going to talk, in fact, I think I tried to talk a little too much at St. John's about Jeremiah. Jeremiah, is in one of those situations, ancient, 2,600 years ago. And I do want to talk a little bit because Jeremiah, this whole notion of hell that we hear about in the gospel, kind of has its antecedents in this story of Jeremiah and some Old Testament practices. And the Old Testament practice in question is human sacrifice, child sacrifice. The thing that was getting Jeremiah so profoundly in trouble was that he was speaking out against the resumption of the practice of human sacrifice, especially child sacrifice, in the Valley of Ben-Hinnom, which is outside of Jerusalem. And that gets translated in the Greek to Gehenna. And Gehenna is the word that we have as hell. But, you know, the valley known for child sacrifice and the theological concept of hell as a place of everlasting torment, those are not exactly equivalent ideas. And so what Jeremiah was speaking out against is the practice of human sacrifice. And parenthetically, I hope we're sort of aware that in the story of Abraham and Isaac, and the story of how it's been interpreted as a prefiguring of God's willingness to sacrifice his own son, I think that's kind of upside down. Because the story of Abraham and Isaac has got to be understood in the social context in which human sacrifice, if not normal, was a pretty regular practice. If any of us hear a voice inside your head telling you to go kill your son, please come see me. If you hear that voice, it is understood to be a kind of a psychotic aberration, your own personal delusion that you're going to act out. But that's not what it was for Abraham. Abraham was living in a context in which to be religious meant that you propitiated the divinity by offering a human sacrifice. Think of Agamemnon before the Trojan Wars sacrificing his daughter. Human sacrifice was a normal, religious, pious thing to do. And so rather than hearing the story of Abraham and Isaac as God being fairly capricious and, messing with Abraham's head, I'm going to test him, see if he'll really kill his son. No, it was Abraham doing what a religious person did, and then understanding that the God they were following, the real God, in fact, did not demand human sacrifice. Did not demand human sacrifice. So it is a profound jump forward in religious understanding, leaving behind this practice of human sacrifice, and yet it had kind of a downward pull. They kept going back to it. That's what was getting Jeremiah in so much trouble. And he was anguished, and he didn't like speaking out, think Gehenna. Gehenna is where it was all happening, the Valley of Ben Hinnom. And I'm not quite sure what Jesus meant when he was talking about hell, frankly. He talks about it with some frequency. I'm not quite sure. I've come to my own conclusions about the God who has created us and loves us with infinite generosity did not bring us out of nothing in order to consign us to everlasting suffering. I just think that is... as far as my human understanding goes, that's not the God we worship. So I'll leave my discussion of hell for there. I think everything that Jesus was talking about has to do with making the conflict and the suffering and the difficulties of everyday life meaningful. The stuff that he was talking about with families. Again, it's not that we're supposed to just sort of be angry with our family members, but rather it is listening to that inner voice within us that speaks, in a sense, a truth that we can't even argue with. Our feelings are what they are. Our experiences have a certain non-negotiable quality. I can come to understand my past experiences differently. And I think that's what Freud was really talking about. But I can't, the events of the past, they are there. I cannot change them. But I don't have to run away from them in my heart. I don't have to be afraid of them. And once we have sort of accepted this invitation of Jesus, saying, don't be afraid of what's actually going on in your heart. Don't be afraid of that. He says, everything that's covered up will be uncovered. Everything that's whispered in the dark will be shouted. I mean, it's as if Jesus is saying, don't think you're as hidden as you actually want to believe you are. We're actually always transparent to God and quite a bit more transparent to each other than we like to acknowledge. There is always, in any social situation, some kind of tension between what we pretend is going on in the surface and what is actually going on in the depths. And Jesus wants us to leave the surface behind and go for the truth of the depth. And it doesn't mean that everything we find in the depth is good or that we're supposed to act it out. But Jesus does not want us to live in this kind of torment of a divided self. So, I'm actually going to see if I'm... He doesn't want us to live in the torment of a divided self. And so, when Jesus speaks about the sword and the conflict within a family, I want us to hear that as constructive conflict. It's the conflict that comes when people get anxious. Because now we're talking about the things we really need to talk about. And I would raise my hand as someone who has done that rather unskillfully as a 20-year-old with the first taste. Oh, that's what's going on in my family? And I can't wait to rub my parents' faces in it. That's not what Jesus is talking about. Jesus is talking about beginning to listen to the seed or the source of spiritual growth within yourself. The truth about your own experience. Jesus would say the truth about God. And Jesus says, you have to make this the most important thing in your life. It's more important than whatever you think your family relations are. It's more important. It's more important than anything. And of course, there's so many issues in these texts. It's not fighting about Jesus. I believe in Jesus. You don't, mother, so I have to leave you. It's not that at all. It's rather taking into yourself the spirit of Jesus and talking to your mother about what you actually see going on, speaking the truth in love. But just because it is in true love does not mean it's not going to raise people's anxiety. Blessed are you if you take no offense at me, says Jesus, because I'm going to uncover the world within which we live. I'm going to lay it bare. And it will destroy your naive tranquility, thinking that we're all good and all families are happy and our nation is virtuous and all. I'm going to take that illusory security away and help you build a life on a deeper and true foundation. Speak the truth in love to one another and then continue speaking the truth in love to one another when the anxiety starts to take over. Because we're all afraid of being uncovered. We're all afraid that that some fundamental part of ourselves is going to be revealed, and then what's going to happen? And of course, for Jesus, what happens when we're revealed? The light that reveals us, the human light, often rather punitive and judgmental, the divine light that reveals us entirely for our benefit, gives back whatever the light reveals, so that we can make use of it and begin to live constructive, helpful, loving lives founded not on a flight from ourselves, but in the truth of our own hearts and the indwelling presence of God. It's what Paul was talking about. You know, this old self built on the social fiction and the need to belong, that self gets crucified. It changes. And there's a new life. And you're no longer enslaved by the need to run away. You're no longer torn by conflict. You're going to Thanksgiving dinner and you're going to tell the same old lies to each other. No. Speak the truth in love. And it doesn't mean that there will be no conflict. But it won't be meaningless conflict in flight from yourself or in flight from a relationship. It'll be the real conflict that actually brings human beings into existence.